Today on Personally Speaking, we have Paolo Mantovani as our guest, an amazing actor and singer presently on Broadway in the musical Funny Girl. Stay with us. Hello and welcome to Personally Speaking. I'm your host, Monsignor Jim Lasanti. An actor and singer, Paolo Mantovani, joins me now. Paolo is best known for his turn as Prince Charming opposite Brandy in the 1997 TV version of Rodgers and Hammerstein's Cinderella. After 10 years being away from the Broadway stage, Paolo is back in the limelight in the musical Funny Girl, portraying Florence Ziegfeld. Paolo was previously seen on Broadway in Breakfast at Tiffany's, Pacific Overtures, and The King and I. He's here with us today to talk about his life, his career, returning to the stage in Funny Girl, and the values that mean the most to him. Joining me now, I'm so pleased to welcome to Personally Speaking, the great actor, Paolo Mantovani. Paolo, thank you so much for coming on the program. Let me begin by asking, I was surprised to hear that you were actually born in Manila, and I'm always intrigued by when any family, including my own from Italy, come from another country. Have your parents ever told you why they left the Philippines, and was it a good decision?
Right. So I've had these conversations with them actually recently. And it's interesting because there are two sides of the story. The first side of it is my mother's side, where it was during the 70s, there was actually this push for immigrants to come to the United States, especially if they are in the STEM fields. And both of my parents were chemists at the time.
Okay.
So according to my mom, her entire application process for a green card was 2 weeks long. Can you imagine?
Oh, no, I can't. No.
Isn't that wild?
It is. I have a priest from the Philippines helping me here, great guy, Andy. And it's been like 8 years till he finally got the green card, you know, and your mother did well, you know,
so they'd
come over for work.
Yes, they'd come over for work. They were both research chemists.
Okay.
And they were working at Rockefeller University.
Sure.
As research chemists back in the 70s.
So you come from smart people.
I like to think that they're smart people. I'm blessed to have
let's talk a little bit about them for a moment. You know, I think we are all very much formed and shaped by the influence of our parents. When you look back at the way they raised you, what did your folks do right?
I'll be quite honest with you, and it's not just because I'm speaking to Monsignor Jim Lasanti. I was brought a Catholic from a very, very young age. Went to a Catholic school through grammar school and went to a Jesuit prep school.
Wow.
I'm practicing Catholic. So I think a lot of those, the tenets and moral values that were infused through my teachers and through my family and through the block rosary novenas that would come along.
Yes.
There was an entire community in Jersey City that was really steeped in the Catholic faith, and as specifically even the Filipino Catholic community at large there.
Yeah. How about that experience? St. Peter's was the one you went to, right?
Yes, St. Peter's Prep.
And that's Jesuit?
Yes, it's Jesuit.
Good experience?
Great experience.
Okay.
Really, really fantastic experience. As you may know, the Jesuits are some of the freer thinking.
Yes.
Of that, about that. Of the Catholic community. Yeah.
Including this Pope, you know.
Yes, I think they're the perfect conduits for curious minds to interact with the world and to understand the world and to understand each other and to understand people. And I really believe that that's stuck with me throughout my life.
There's an actor, Kyle MacArthur, young fellow who went to Regis, and when I asked him about the experience of Jesuit education, he said, you know, they never taught us what to think, but they taught us how to think. And ultimately to come back to, he said, I embraced my faith, but not because anyone shoved it down my throat, but because it made sense as they put it to me. And but then I want to know, because for those who don't know, Paolo then went on to, of all things, Rutgers to study psychology. How did that happen?
Right. So I had actually planned to become a doctor. That was the great master plan was I thought that I would be one of the first singing pediatric cardiologists, singing over little baby hearts while I operated over them. And I went head first into it. My first 2 years at Rutgers, did all of my prerequisites out of the way. Mm-hmm. And I'll be honest with you, I got burnt out. I got a little burnt out, and I said, I need to expand my education to things that I'm interested in and things outside of the sciences. So I looked into psychology, which would have allowed me to graduate still in 4 years. This was the time when like the five-year program of going to school was very popular, and I still wanted to graduate in 4 years. And I took up the psychology degree, and I pursued acting classes and singing classes and geology classes and literature classes. I went back and basically did it all. I felt like I got my well-rounded college education my last 2 years. And the last year of college, I was doing a play, and a New York agent came down to see it, and he said, hey, do you want to pursue this? And I said, oh, well, my parents are here. Maybe we can talk about it. And we went to the student center together, and we said we'd give it a shot. He pulled a contract out of his briefcase, and I signed on the spot right there.
That's a perfect segue, because there's tons of Filipino families in my parish, and they are the hardest working, dedicated people in the world. But I wonder, when parents know that their son is now moving into the world of the arts, not as an avocation, but as a vocation, how do they respond to this? Because you know, and I know that the world you're in, sometimes it works and sometimes it's a long wait in between, as opposed to everybody I know who's Filipino who says, you work every day.
Right.
How do they respond to your avocation, now a vocation?
Well, there are a lot of prayers. There still are. There's a lot of convincing throughout my career, it's not too late to be an accountant or to go back to be a doctor, you know. And I said,
right.
Well, maybe. Yeah, I don't know. They were very supportive of it. You know, I think not just Filipino parents, but any parents that love their kids, they just want to make sure that they're set up well for life, to make sure that they can take care of themselves,
right.
clothe themselves, shelter themselves, feed themselves, and hopefully be able to start a family and do the same for them. So there, like I said, there was a lot of faith involved there for those first few years. Luckily, thank God, I started working pretty much immediately after college. Now, it wasn't always like that. You know, there were a lot of sparse moments there.
Sure.
That's where you.
Well, right now, for those who are listening and watching, Paolo is in the wonderful show Funny Girl and playing Flo Ziegfeld. I want to talk more about that. But
sure.
In the moments when you know you're perfect for a role and you have the talent for it and it doesn't come your way, have you figured out a way in life to deal with disappointment, rejection? I was perfect for it, but what do you do with that?
It wasn't God's will, and God has a plan for me for something else. And I believe it's usually for something greater, not necessarily greater for myself, maybe greater for somebody else. I hope that what we do as actors and as storytellers, we can be a conduit through the divine. And to be able to heal spirits and souls through the arts. So when I feel like I'm totally perfect for a part and it doesn't go my way, I often think, well, maybe the person who got the part needed that part more than I did, or maybe they could tell the story better than I could have possibly had. They might have had an insight that I didn't have at the time.
Now, you did get this part, and I wanted to ask you, did you know anything about Flo Ziegfeld before you had the part?
Other than the fact that there's a movie theater called
That's right.
the Ziegfeld Theater here in New York
Big,
City.
big place, right?
Big, big place. And the New Amsterdam Theater is the theater. It's still open. It's a theater that where Flo Ziegfeld mounted his Ziegfeld Follies. When I was a younger actor, first coming into the business, there was a show called Will Rogers Follies.
Sure.
I don't know.
Tommy Tune, yeah.
Tommy Tune. Yeah. Directed it, and David Carradine, I think.
That's right.
Was it David or is it Keith Carradine? It was one of the Carradine brothers.
Right.
Right. Okay. There was this number. So it was Will Rogers, who was actually one of Flo Ziegfeld's stars in one of the Follies that he had. And the numbers have like the glorious Ziegfeld Folly girls dancing behind him in these kind of elaborate costumes. They all look like Rockettes, right? And they're all incredible dancers and performers. That always stuck with me, and to actually play now the great Broadway impresario who's responsible for that,
right?
And also kind of responsible for the reason why Broadway is such a spectacle now, with the sets, lighting, costume, incredible performers. That really goes to the vision that Flo Ziegfeld had a long, long time ago, when a lot of people didn't believe in him.
Yeah. Paolo Montalban is a great actor, and I've seen him a few times on Broadway primarily, and I remember one of the performances was Breakfast at Tiffany's. I mentioned your communication skills, whether it's television or movies or theater, because this is a little bit of a religious question, but when I look at the surveys that indicate that tons of people don't go near a church, I know one of the things that we've got to work on is our inability to effectively communicate that, if we were dynamic and we were touching people in a profound way, they would come, and they're not. Too many people say to me, especially in pre-Cana, so young adult couples say, hey, I go, I get nothing out of it. As both a believer and a great communicator, what do you suggest we might do to make the experience of faith a more attractive thing, a thing that people will engage? What can we do better, Paolo?
It's really quite interesting, Monsignor, because I've had the opportunity to go around the country, not just on tour, but in regional theater, and I lived out in Los Angeles. So that would mean that I would be going to different churches to go to church on Sunday, and so I would experience different church community, Catholic church communities, different pastors, different Monsignors. And I really believe it comes from each personal priest's desire to reach out to their community, both young and old, both the established community that comes and reach out. Like, for instance, I remember some of these places where they had like martini night, so there would be like a mixer type of a thing, right? Yeah. And it was like, and I thought that was really fun, and I actually went and volunteered, to help make that happen. And I think there are fun ways to, fun and engaging ways to bring people back to the church, and maybe to refresh their ideas of what the church is and what it stands for.
You've been in a number of plays and musicals, and I've often wondered about this. So you get into a production like Funny Girl, and you have this community of people that you grow to like, and I've heard people and many actors say it becomes almost like a family. But here's my concern. So you join this family, but it's a short-term family. Maybe it's months, maybe if you're really lucky, it's a year. How do you become part of people's lives and then walk away?
Well, in many ways, you don't ever truly walk away. They're always a part of you. They've left a deep and lasting impact on me, and I hope I've done the same to them. And more often than not, you will literally work with them again. And so when I first came on board with Funny Girl, two of the actors said to me, I don't know if you remember, but we'd worked X amount of years ago,
okay.
when I was just getting out of college, and I was in the ensemble, even the lead, and now I'm watching these my coworkers step up and playing the lead roles in Funny Girl. Stephen Mark Lucas is a fine example, and now he's going to be playing Nick Arnstein on the national tour of Funny Girl. He's really truly excellent in the role. Daniel Beeman, who I also worked with before, was an ensemble member in a regional theater thing that I'd done before, and now he's going to continue with the new Spamalot that's coming to Broadway in the fall. So it's you're never really apart from them. You don't say goodbye to them as a family. It's I compare it to seeing my family in the Philippines. I haven't been there since 2003, but I know that if I went back there right now, I'd be welcomed with open arms.
Okay, now let's talk a little bit about the experience of that thing. I have no easy time admitting it, but yesterday, Paolo, I was 30, and I'm not anymore. I cannot believe the quickness of years. I mention that because you're in this field of the arts where you know they seem sometimes to glorify the latest thing, the youngest thing, the prettiest thing. When you're in the arts, and if we're not aging, we're dying. So we're glad to be aging. But how do you handle that in a world where they judge so often? For those who are listening and watching, People magazine called Paolo back in 1998 one of the 50 most beautiful people in the world. That's beautiful, but it's also what a pressure. Oh my God! So how do you deal with the natural process of aging? Does it bother you at all, or do you welcome it?
I welcome it. I welcome the natural process of aging as far as the experience and the lessons that I've learned along the way. I try to preserve the other processes of aging, like taking care of my joints and making sure I don't do a lot of kneeling rolls. I do a very simple skincare regimen and wear sunscreen. But to your point of the entertainment industry celebrating the what's new and what's fresh and what's young and beautiful, that has actually been changing quite a bit in the past 5 to 10 years. And you'll see. So, for instance, I just started watching a show called Murders in the Building, and it has Steve Martin and Martin Short.
Yes,
Selena Gomez in it, and you have all of these mature actors thriving and being very, very popular in a celebrated television series. So I think that's changing, and I also think that to this thing of representation, representation doesn't just cross ethnic boundaries; it crosses age boundaries as well. And I think that people of my age, people who are older than me, and people who are younger than me, all want to see themselves represented on the screen, or the stage, because they want to see their stories told.
Yeah, I like that you use that word mature. It's much kinder than old, you know. Now let's talk a little bit about critics. I don't know if you've ever taken them seriously. Do you read criticism of a performance, or do you find it's a distraction, best to avoid it? What's your response to the fact that if you're in the arts, there's people out there sitting there who are going to tell you what they think of what you're doing and how you're doing it?
It's really interesting that you say this, because I was going to ask you, are you talking about reading my own reviews or reading other
Actually, for yourself, reviews? For yourself, for you as an actor, yeah.
For me, with regards to myself, a fellow actor of mine once told me that they don't read reviews because the good ones go to their head and the bad ones go to their heart.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So that being said, I generally don't read reviews while I'm doing a show, but I might pick up a review maybe 3 years later or months later, once I'm removed from the show and removed from the experience, and and see what one person's experience was in the seat, either in the movie theater or, you know, at the theater, and what their opinion was at the time. I think that if you read the review while you're in the process, then it can affect
what
the director, what the producers, and what your fellow actors created together with you. And you might change that, right?
No, I hear what you're saying. There's a Catholic film director, Ted Melfi. He directed Hidden Figures and St. Vincent with Bill Murray. But I asked him a similar question. He's a little more aggressive than you are, because you're such a nice guy. He said, those critics couldn't do what I do. They couldn't write a script. They couldn't direct a movie. I'm going to listen to these guys. So, but he's not completely wrong, you know?
No, he's not completely wrong. There's a story about a doctor who, a surgeon, a high, you know, one of the most skilled surgeons in New York City, sitting in a Broadway house in the middle of, you know, the intermission. He says to his date, "I'm so glad that I'm not on that stage. There's no way I can do this." I really think that each person is called to do something different and do it excellent, right? In an excellent way.
Paolo Montalban's our guest. I want to ask you too, because we've had some wonderful guests over the years, but three of them in particular we got to talk about. When you're a person of faith in the arts community, and let's be honest, there's a lot of secular values in the arts community. Religion is not widely embraced. I'm thinking Kelly O'Hara, practicing Catholic, Victoria Clark, very devout Christian, Harry Connick, devout Catholic. But not so much Harry, but the two women said, yeah, we're a minority, and there are people out there who can be very cynical and jaded about anybody who embraces religion. So how does Paolo handle loving the arts community? They're part of your family, but also saying, yeah, but I'm also part of a family of faith. Have you ever had to defend who you are, what you are as a man of faith?
No, actually, because the arts community is actually more embracing than most people think it is. And the big question that comes up is like, Paolo, how are you? Why are you so patient, or why are you so kind? And I said, well, it's because of my faith. It's because of how I was brought up. It's because I believe in God in here and mm-hmm. here, right? And so just existing, I hope that I can bring God into the world, right?
Yeah.
Through kindness and trying to see people and see them for who they are. So no, I've actually been very fortunate where I haven't felt attacked by
right,
we're not Catholic and you're the only Catholic in the room.
You know, as you're speaking about, 2 months ago, my mom passed away, and my nephew gave the eulogy. Yeah, she's a great lady, 102, God bless her. But my nephew,
good genes.
Yeah, I'm hoping, you know.
She was very mature.
Why was she mature? My nephew Matthew gave the eulogy, and he said, I know God because of Grandma. She was God's love for me. And that's what you're saying, too, is that you hope to be God's love for people, and you're probably the best commercial I've ever seen for the peace and the serenity of love and kindness come from above. And I did a funeral recently where a Jewish friend of mine was there, and she said, you know, what you guys say about heaven and the life to come, it's very comforting. She said, in my Jewish community, we don't have that. And I said, well, we do believe it's comforting, but we don't say it because it's comforting. We say it because we believe it to be true. And she said, well, that must be a wonderful thing to have such a faith. And I promise, last question, Paolo, and then I'm going to let you get back to getting ready. But I've grown up under, as you have, a number of holy fathers, and this one is one of the more interesting ones, to be sure. But what's your view of Pope Francis? A blessing for the church, a challenge for the church? You know, as a guy who loves his faith and loves his religion, we've got a different kind of pope now, a Jesuit, to be sure. Yes. What's your read on him?
Listen. I grew up mainly with Pope John Paul II. In fact, my name is Paolo because of Pope John Paul, right? So in the Philippines, it would have been Papa Paolo, right?
Right.
So That in the 70s, it was actually one of the most common names in the Philippines was Paolo because of Pope John Paul. So that's what I grew up with. However, since I was a practice, I've been a practicing Catholic from that time and to now, I've seen the progress that the church has made. I see the progress that the church can potentially have. And it's interesting because I love Pope Francis and what he's bringing to the people, and I love the way that he's I think he actually has he's he might be our greatest hope for bringing the youth back into the church. And I hope that there's a way for him to bridge the gap between the old and the new, right? Because you also don't want to shut out the congregation that you have now and sacrifice it for the congregation that you want in the future. So I hope and I pray that he'll be able to bridge that gap so that everyone can kind of live in peace and harmony.
I think he's trying, and having a program like this with so many people from the arts or on, people identify as atheists or agnostic, but they'll say time and time again, but that guy makes me for the first time look at religion, because of the openness of his style and his mind and his kindness. All right, we're going to wrap, but I want to say, Paolo Montalban, I am so grateful to you for coming on our program. And you probably know this about yourself, your innate kindness, gentleness, sweetness comes across. And I couldn't ask for a better gift from anyone, not only in the arts, but just as a person. And you honor us by being on and being, quite frankly, unapologetic about who you are, what you believe. Over the years, because I've been doing this for 30 years, so often I'll have someone who's the usual line has always been, I was raised Catholic, but, and then they dance away. And you come on and you say, hey, this is who I am. And I'm comfortable being who I am. And I can't tell you how refreshing that is. And what a sign of hope you are for a guy like me who has given his life to the church. And by the way, if the acting thing for any reason goes south, we will ordain you tomorrow, Paolo.
Will there be a lot of video hours that I have to clock in?
But thank you so much for being on the program.
Thank
You
you
are
so
a
much, Monsignor.
great, great
Thanks for having
man.
me.
As we end today's program, if you'd like to reach out to me for any reason, you can get me at personallyspeakingpodcast@gmail.com. Aside from listening to us on SiriusXM, the Catholic channel, you can also watch us on YouTube by going to Personally Speaking with Monsignor Jim Lasanti. Please hit like and subscribe. We're also, as you probably know, on Facebook at Personally Speaking with Monsignor Jim Lasanti, and now we're also on Instagram at Personally Speaking Podcast. I'm privileged to serve as host and executive producer, Personally Speaking. We'll be with you again next time on Personally Speaking.